Welcome to SCOTUScast, Patents and Laws of Nature Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 20, 2012, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Mayo Collaborative Services versus Prometheus Laboratories, Incorporated. The question in this case was whether a patent can be issued for an observed correlation between blood test results and patient reactions to prescription drugs. In an opinion delivered by Justice Breyer, the court held unanimously that such a patent effectively attempts to claim underlying laws of nature and is therefore invalid. To discuss the case, we have Adam Mossoff, who is a professor at George Mason University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Mossoff.
Hello, this is Adam Mossoff, professor of law at George Mason University School of Law. And today I'm going to be speaking about the Supreme Court's decision in Mayo v. Prometheus, which was handed down on March 20, 2012. It was a unanimous decision with an opinion written by Justice Stephen Breyer. The result of the case was that the Supreme Court reversed the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, which had affirmed a patent on a diagnostic method that correlated drug treatments with toxicity levels in a patient's blood. Justice Breyer held that purely diagnostic methods like this that measure only correlations are unpatentable because these correlations are laws of nature that cannot be secured as property rights in the patent system. Now, my podcast today will consist of basically three parts. First, I'm going to give a quick background to the case. Second, I'm going to talk about the decision. And then lastly, I'll do a little bit of analysis and talk about some of the issues that this case raises. First, as a preliminary matter, this case arises from two developments in patent law in recent years. The first is the expansion in what counts as a patentable invention in the medical and biotech fields that has occurred since the biotech revolution began about 30 years ago. And the second development is the Supreme Court's interest in the past several years in what types of inventions or discoveries can be, in fact, patented. Now, this is what we call in patent law patentable subject matter. Now, some discoveries, such as discoveries of laws of nature or abstract ideas, the classic examples being E equals MC squared, discovered by Einstein, or the law of gravity, discovered by Newton, are not permitted to be patented at all. And in fact, Justice Breyer discusses both of these now classic examples in his opinion in Mayo. Now, these discoveries are indeed novel, they're useful, and they're non-obvious, which are the basic requirements for receiving a patent on a new invention. But these are not inventions of new things or processes. They don't involve technological devices or processes that result from man-made creations and that the patent system is supposed to secure as property rights. And thus, things like laws of nature or abstract ideas are foreclosed absolutely from being considered for patent protection. Now, that's a little bit of a preliminary background. Now, here's the basic background to the case, which I'll just summarize in its most basic relevant issues in the invention as such. Now, Prometheus owns a couple patents on a method, what patent law refers to as a process, for providing drug treatments to patients who suffer from inflammatory bowel disease. Now, the patent covers the process of administering drugs and then correlating the amount of drugs with toxicity levels in the patient's blood. Now, this process surely is useful and has lots of benefits. And in fact, the benefit of this method is dosing and correlating the drug levels in a patient is that it minimizes the toxic side effects of the drugs and thus maximizes the benefits of the therapeutic treatment. Now, Prometheus licensed to the Mayo Clinic this patented treatment, but Mayo later started using its own treatment method that essentially was covered by Prometheus's patent. Now, Prometheus then sued Mayo for patent infringement, and Mayo argued in its defense that Prometheus couldn't sue it because the patent that it was claiming to have been infringed was in fact invalid, that it should not have received this patent from the Patent and Trademark Office at all. And that was the issue that was raised and came to dominate the litigation, and that was the issue ultimately on which the U.S. Supreme Court granted cert, which is this. Is this an invention, this method of correlating drugs with toxicity in a patient's blood, is this an invention deserving of protection under the patent law? Again, is this patentable subject matter, or is this merely a discovery of a law of nature or an abstract idea? Now, there are two backstories to this case that are very important to understand how the case came out the way it did. The first is that Justice Breyer previously wrote in 2006 that he thought that patents such as these are invalid because they cover laws of nature. Now, this occurred in a dissent in a case that was dismissed for being improperly granted, that was digged, called LabCorp v. Metabolite, which was digged in 2006. Thus, just as a preliminary matter, in the first line of the slip opinion that came down this past Tuesday, which read, quote, Justice Breyer delivered the opinion of the court, end quote, patent lawyers and commentators knew immediately what the result of the case was going to be. Now, the second backstory is also important because it's very important to realize that this is the second time this case actually has come before the U.S. Supreme Court. Significantly, the Supreme Court actually vacated the Federal Circuit's judgment in favor of Prometheus affirming the patent following the Supreme Court's decision in a case called Bilski v. Kappos in 2010. Now, that was a case in which the Supreme Court was asked to assess whether business methods count as patentable subject matter or not. Now, the Supreme Court ultimately upheld business methods as qualifying for patent protection, but it rejected the legal test used by the Federal Circuit to assess whether such inventions are patentable or not. Now, the Federal Circuit had used that legal test to uphold Prometheus' patent originally. So in handing down the decision in Bilski v. Kappos, the Supreme Court then also immediately granted, vacated, and remanded Mayo v. Prometheus back down to the Federal Circuit. Now, on remand, the Federal Circuit reached the exact same result, and so unsurprisingly, the Supreme Court again granted cert, and that was the position that we were facing procedurally when the court heard oral argument and handed down its decision. Now, on to the decision. Basically, there are two parts to Justice Breyer's argument as to why Prometheus's patent is invalid on the grounds that it is unpatentable subject matter. First, Justice Breyer argues that the existence of correlations between chemicals in the world is just a law of nature. And in fact, he goes at great length to argue that essentially what this patent covers is the measuring of correlations between chemicals, chemicals that exist in the blood and chemicals that exist in the drugs that a physician is administering to that patient, and correlations of such chemical reactions are laws of nature. And in fact, he proceeds to argue at length that this is not even an application of a law of nature in some technological process, which might be patentable, for laws of nature are used in many contexts, in every invention, in some applied way. Thus, for instance, a nuclear reactor involves a method of applying E equals MC squared. Now, the reactor is patentable as an application of E equals MC squared. So there the patent wouldn't cover E equals MC squared. The patent would cover the reactor as a technological application of this law of nature. And thus, as Justice Breyer puts it in his slip opinion on page 8, quote, to put the matter more precisely, do the patent claims here add enough to their statements of the correlations to allow the processes they describe to qualify as patent-eligible processes that apply natural laws, end quote. The answer in this case, and in cases involving similar types of claim methods and patents, is absolutely, without any doubt, no. Justice Breyer goes on to talk about the fact that despite crafty verbiage in the patent that dressed up the patent claims to make them look like they covered an application of this correlation, for instance, the patent directed doctors to apply the information from the correlation in administering more drugs, the patent really covered in substance and effect just the correlation itself. In other words, merely adding words in a patent that a doctor must apply the correlation in further treatment is not enough of an innovative contribution to convert the invention here from a process that merely describes a law of nature into a process that inventively applies a law of nature. In language that Justice Breyer uses repeatedly throughout the opinion, he writes that a patent on a process that covers a law of nature, such as a chemical correlation, is ineligible for patent protection if it is, quote, in context, obvious, already in use, or purely conventional, end quote. As Justice Breyer writes on page 13 of the slip opinion, quote, these instructions, he's speaking of the patent owned by Prometheus in this context, quote, these instructions add nothing specific to the laws of nature other than what is well understood, conventional activity previously engaged by those in the field, end quote. In other words, what this patent covers is what doctors have always done throughout history. They administer drugs to patients, observe the reactions in patients, and administer more or less drugs based upon those reactions. Now, this language that is used by Justice Breyer throughout his opinion, what is conventional activity, what is previously engaged in by those in the field or already in use, is certainly going to be the legal test that will be employed from this opinion for assessing whether methods or processes count as patentable subject matter or whether they are merely laws of nature or abstract ideas. Now, the second part of Justice Breyer's opinion then argues that invalidating Prometheus's patent is, in fact, consistent with both prior case law on what counts as patentable subject matter and with the patent statutes themselves. Now, this part of the opinion was not surprising because there was extensive discussion at oral argument on distinguishing between the various tests for determining whether a patent is valid or not. There are essentially four sections of the Patent Act that apply to determining whether an invention should be patented or not. First is Section 101, which covers what types of inventions can be patented. It's called patentable subject matter. Second is Section 102, the novelty section. The inventions have to be new. The third is Section 103, the non-obvious section. Inventions have to be non-obvious. And the third is Section 112, which requires the patent to be fully disclosed in the patent specification. It's called the written description requirement. Now, in fact, distinguishing between these four sections was a major theme in the Solicitor General's amicus brief that it filed in this case. Now, the Solicitor General actually played a significant role in this case because it filed a brief in support of neither party because it was not in support of Prometheus's patent because it believed that Prometheus's patent is invalid, but it believed that Prometheus's patent was invalid because it wasn't novel under either Section 102 or that it was obvious and thus invalid under Section 103. Thus, in conclusion, the Solicitor General said that this case is really not about patentable subject matter at all, and the court shouldn't be treating it as a patentable subject matter case under Section 101. Now, in the opinion, Breyer rejects this approach and this argument as essentially asking courts to ignore Section 101 and then to shoehorn the patentable subject matter analysis into other statutory sections. Now, as a basic point, this violates canons of statutory construction, conflating the different statutory sections together, which clearly serve different purposes. In fact, it's a basic canon of statutory construction that courts are not to ignore separate statutory provisions and blending the tests between them. Also, Justice Breyer goes on to note that this can't work because each of these sections actually has a different function and they're not designed to perform the other functions, and thus this will just breed more uncertainty and confusion in the law. Now, Breyer also spends some time in the latter portion of his opinion discussing the court's precedents on patentable subject matter, as it's actually this case law that is the source of the rules about law of nature or abstract ideas being excluded from patents, not the actual literal language of Section 101. This is simply a judicial gloss on Section 101. Now, as in many other areas of law, there are cases that cut in both directions. There are much more restrictive decisions in past Supreme Court decisions on what counts as patentable subject matter, and there are past Supreme Court decisions where the court has taken a more expansive approach to what can count as patentable subject matter. In fact, during oral argument, Justice Breyer highlighted this point, proclaiming to the lawyers that, quote, if you look at the court's cases, they seem to say in Fluke one thing and then in Deere another thing, end quote. Of course, in Justice Breyer's analysis, in his actual opinion, the past decisions that adopted a more restrictive approach and were more stringent about what counts as a law of nature and thus is unpatentable take front and center. And Justice Breyer works hard at casting or recasting past decisions that were more expansive in their approach about what types of inventions can count as patentable subject matter, like Diamond v. Deere handed down in 1981, trying to cast those decisions in ways that support his decision today. Now, at the end of the day, the court's opinion really expresses the policy concern that the reason why laws of nature cannot be patented is that this will, quote, inhibit further discovery by improperly tying up the future use of laws of nature, end quote. Now, in some respects, it's not surprising that the court would say this in an opinion by Justice Breyer that is also joined by Justices Thomas and Scalia, not to mention Chief Justice Roberts or Justice Alito. And the reason is because the grant of power to Congress in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 8 to even adopt the patent laws is a power that grants Congress to promote the progress of the useful arts, end quote. Thus, Breyer changes slightly his argument from his 2006 dissent from the Digg and LabCorp, where he focused more on utilitarian-style cost-benefit analysis, to one that bases his rejection of this type of patent in a policy that is, in fact, embedded in the text of the Constitution. In other words, we have a slight peek into the decision-making process here in the halls of the U.S. Supreme Court, and such things are what unanimous court decisions are made of. But as a policy matter and more substantively, this is in fact a big concern in these cases. The court does not want to formulate a rule that inadvertently prevents the next wave of innovation from receiving patent protection. And this was in fact the broader issue at stake in Mayo. They're really worried about foreclosing the patent system completely to entire categories of discoveries or inventions. I mean, the potential error costs to future innovation are extremely high in cases like Mayo. Because the one thing that we know for certain about innovation is that we don't know what form it will take or how it will impact our lives in the future. The biotech is a prominent example of this. No one could have foreseen 30 or 40 years ago that today we would have such knowledge of the human genome and of the genetic conditions that we now have. The digital revolution is another example of this. No one could have foreseen even 15 years ago the rise of smartphones, 4G, people playing games, watching movies on their telephones, and other types of amazing things that we now do. But this concern about foreclosing innovation, in fact, cuts both ways, as Justice Breyer emphasizes in his opinion. Permitting patents on laws of nature can undermine future innovation just as much as foreclosing the next wave of innovation from the patent system can also undermine future innovation. This is an issue of significant dispute among patent commentators and scholars. And in this particular case, the concern about too much patenting as a problem with future innovation won the day. Of course, how this will play out in future cases and which side is right in this fundamental policy dispute in the patent system remains to be seen. Now, I'd also like to make two more quick points before I conclude my podcast. Now, as my penultimate point, I'd just like to point out that many lawyers and commentators have expressed concern that Justice Breyer ends up mixing up the statutory analysis in his opinion in Mayo. In announcing a patentable subject matter test that asks courts to look at whether a process is, quote, obvious, already in use, or purely conventional, unquote, it sounds very much like lower courts will now have to shoehorn into the Section 101 patentable subject matter analysis the types of analysis is typically done under Section 103 for whether something is obvious, or the type of analysis that is typically done under Section 102 about whether something is novel, meaning whether it's already in use or not. Ironically, it does sound like Breyer and the court end up committing the exact same error that they accused the Solicitor General of having made, mixing up the tests in the different provisions of the patent statutes. Of course, in Justice Breyer's opinion, they accused the Solicitor General of mixing up the tests from Section 101 into 102, 103, and 112, but the argument can be made back to Justice Breyer in the court that he is mixing up the tests that are in 102, 103, and 112 and are putting them into 101. At a minimum, this concern raises some uncertainty about exactly how this new patentable subject matter will play out in the courts in the coming years. Now, my last point is that this case portends very darkly for the biotech industry in the pending cert petition in AMP v. Myriad, which raises the issue of whether isolated natural phenomena, such as gene sequences, are patentable. This is a current cert petition that is pending before the U.S. Supreme Court. In fact, the court is likely to issue its decision on Monday, March 26, as to whether it's going to actually grant cert, deny cert, or grant, vacate, and remand in accord with its decision this week in Mayo. If it grants cert, or if it does a GVR back to the Federal Circuit, then this clearly would mean that the court wants to do a more stringent patentable subject matter analysis for products of nature like genes, just as it has adopted in Mayo a more stringent analysis for patentable subject matter for processes. Now, given that both of these types of patents, product patents on things like genes and process patents on things like testing methods, are the bread and butter of the modern biotech industry, the combination of more restrictive rules being handed down in both Mayo and potentially in Myriad could raise a lot of problems for the existing business model, the biotech industry, which has relied on, since the inception of this industry about three decades ago, its ability to get patents on similar types of processes and products, like testing methods and genes. At a minimum, it is clear the Supreme Court continues to be very unhappy with how the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit has been formulating and applying legal rules for how inventions may be patented. The decision in Mayo represents just one of many significant reversals of the Federal Circuit in the past 4 to 5 years on such issues as the proper legal test for patenting business methods and whether inventions are obvious under Section 103, among many other issues. Whether this trend will continue in Myriad or in more cases is a question that patent lawyers, commentators, and industry stakeholders will be following very closely in the coming months and years. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.